Hi, welcome to the Brown and Happy podcast. In our time together, I will share what it means to be brown and happy. For many of us, everything looks good on paper, but we're still not happy and living fulfilled lives. It's time to change this, and I can help. I'm your host, Dr. Payal Patel Gayal. Hello, everyone. Happy to have you guys back. What a fun time of the year. I've had so many beautiful women come on this podcast and share their stories. And today we have Dr. Flora Sinha, who is a primary care doctor and a coach. I found her on Instagram. And, you know, I know you guys are on Instagram and scrolling and looking at all the fun things. And she really caught my eye. And her energy really matches my energy. And I saw that she has some amazing work to share. So I'm going to let her introduce herself and kind of how she came into the space, and we'll take it from there.
All right, Payal, thank you so much for having me. I'm really excited to have an open and honest conversation. For those who don't know, I'm Flora Sinha. I am an internal medicine physician. I'm a mindset transformation coach. And I think I have a lot of labels, and I think we all do. As women, moms, career women, but I am a proud holder of this label as a infertility IVF warrior, which is really the thing that kind of started this whole mindset transformation journey. So I help women feel unstuck from their ruts. These are accomplished, driven, intelligent women who have done everything that they needed to do, just like so many of us, yet they still don't feel content. They feel unfulfilled, and they desire feeling at peace. And I think we all deserve that. So using mindset tools and techniques that I've mastered, we slowly kind of trudge through and help others feel the same way.
Thank you so much. I did forget to mention that she was a coach, you guys. This just shows our humanness, right? Like nothing is like perfect. And this is what I want to keep sharing with all of our people, right? So we're both brown women and we went down the checklist and on everything looks good on paper, right? But it's okay to not be happy. It's okay to want more. It's okay to want something different. And this is kind of something I've been wanting to go deeper and deeper for myself. And this is how I found Flora too, because I saw a video that she put up about, what is it when the aunties ask you when you're going to have another kid? Like that's like the best. I think it's so fun. So I have two kids. I would have had four, you know, if I was in different circumstances. My background is in pediatrics, but I just like love that, you know, part of it. And so I always wanted a little girl and I have two boys. And so I see that you have a girl. So I would love to hear more about like a little bit about the infertility journey, but kind of also that aspect of societal expectations.
By the way, you can borrow Gia anytime. She's like a great ball of energy and such a wonderful little soul. She'll like catch your heart and keep it forever. Yeah. So I was diagnosed with secondary infertility in late 2018. A lot of us have heard of infertility, but I, even being in the medical field, didn't really know what secondary infertility was. So secondary infertility is the inability to get pregnant and stay pregnant without medical intervention after doing so without medical intervention prior. So we conceived Gia without any problems, yet when it came to trying to grow our family, we couldn't. And so obviously my red flags went off. I went in to get an evaluation. I was diagnosed with unexplained secondary infertility. So I don't have a cause. I have no idea why I can't have kids or stay pregnant. But really that whole experience just led me into a spiral. Most of us are type A women, right? We have our plan. And especially within the South Asian community, I know I've been taught you work hard, make sacrifices, and you will get whatever you want. You will be rewarded. Infertility and IVF undid all of that. Like, I worked hard. I did everything I needed to do. I sacrificed time, my body, money, everything. And I still couldn't get pregnant, even with medical intervention. So after a 3-year roller coaster of pregnancy losses, unsuccessful IVF transfers, we as in my husband and I, made the difficult decision to just stop, meaning stop trying, because we didn't recognize our relationship. So just as a little bit of background, my husband and I have known each other for 20 years. We met in college. So we had a really strong foundation going into this, but life gets hard when there are emotions and there are children involved, and especially being busy physicians, it was tough to ground ourselves. And I remember a point in time, this was amid my infertility cycles. I asked Gia, who was a toddler at that time, and I'm like, "Oh, Gigi, give mommy a hug." And she looked at me and she goes, "I can't give you a hug because I don't want to hurt you. You have too many ouchies." And I remember like pausing and thinking to myself, I have become so crazed with grief and with envy and frustration and anger. Obviously, I was in physical pain with like all the injections and all the side effects, that now my child, my 3-year-old at that time, identified her mom as sick mommy and was afraid to show physical affection. And at that point in time, that was one of many, but one light bulb that went through my head. They're like, okay, the something's got to change. I cannot let this define me, my family, my relationship, my journey, my life. So that's when I started to make small but consistent changes with, regardless of whatever I was going through, regardless of the circumstances that life had thrown me, I was still going to ground myself in gratitude. And that in itself led us to the decision eventually to just stop. Like, we have been blessed and still are with so much. Obviously, a beautiful little girl, wonderful careers, friends, family, endless love and support. Like, why are we putting ourselves through this when maybe honestly it just wasn't meant to be? Even though my life checklist that I was taught said I had to have multiple kids. So that's when we stopped, and we haven't looked back since.
That's amazing. Thank you for sharing. So with Gia, everything was like fine. There was no any thoughts about infertility. You just, right?
Yeah, when I again, we conceived her without any problems. My pregnancy and delivery weren't very pleasant. Gia is a I delivered prematurely, so she
Okay.
came 8 weeks early. Sorry, 6 weeks early, and I mean, she was ready to, have it at life, and she's happy, healthy, thank goodness.
Yeah.
So when it came to trying again, I remember stalling for a little bit because I was going through, postpartum depression and
Yeah.
anxiety. My body, my mind just weren't me. So then when I did pursue IVF, I basically started from a not great foundation for myself. And I was running around like my head was cut off. Like, I was battling a very tough LA commute. I was practicing medicine full time, on top of infertility, which literally is a second job. There's this whole second schedule and slew of medications and procedures and lab draws, and it was a lot. And then all the meantime, my husband, who's also a physician, was undergoing fellowship, which is a training, a subspecialty training program. So his schedule was just completely off the charts, working, 80 to 100 hours a week and changing at the drop of a hat. So it was definitely tough.
Yeah. So I only asked that because I wanted to clarify because you were going through the story and I was like, wait, so Gia was already there and then you went through this. So it's interesting because what I picked up from your story was like how you had a good foundation that you built off of, right? Like that's such a gift to be able to be like, oh, I've known my husband for 20 years, and like we came to this conclusion, together that we're complete.
Despite that wonderful foundation and support I had, I really do think that somewhere in that infertility journey and the among the busy schedules of being, doctors and toddler parents and commuting. I think we both kind of lost a little bit of our footing because we got so wrapped into the next cycle, the next loss, the anticipation, the anxiety. So it really threw us for a loop. Like we decided to take a break somewhere in there from IVF and really just concentrate on the now and figure out our next step. So regardless of what situation we're talking about, it's okay to take a step back. It's a step back. Like take a break. It's okay. Take a minute to breathe, reset, recharge. And that's a lesson that I constantly carry with myself and, tell my patients, tell my clients that it doesn't always have to be on to the next thing. It's okay to ground yourself in gratitude, be happy with what you have and where you are, and also goals, but acknowledge the small moments. I think that's what really sets our foundation, like you said.
Yeah, but culturally speaking, which is very interesting, right? And like we're both laughing right now, because it's this hamster wheel, right? And I'm always talking like on a podcast and just like to with my clients with, it's like we just feel like we're like on this hamster wheel, go, 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 go. And this is not a hamster wheel that started in our adult life. You know, like I'm going to make a big assumption here that you probably did well in school.
Reasonably well, yes.
You did well in school, well enough to be
Well
able
enough.
to do the work that you do now, right? And so, like these habits and these are kind of work ethic and all that is ingrained at a very young age. And like the desire to excel, the desire to keep going and looking at the next thing, you know? And so, this is where, I find that we can shift this for the next generation.
Yeah, absolutely. And I love grabbing these small gems from our culture that it is okay to be driven. It is okay to have a strong work ethic. It is okay to not give up so easily, but it's also okay to know your limits. It's also okay to pause. It's also okay to It's definitely okay to not strive for perfection. And that's absolutely something that, even though we're not setting that example for our child, it's ingrained into her, right? That need for perfection, that need to not color out of the lines, not make a mistake. Anything less than 100 is, oh my God, I failed. And we are something that we weren't taught. We are teaching now our child that you worked like as long as you're giving your 100%, whatever that looks like that day, that is all we ask for. We want you to show up. And if your version of showing up that day is 75%, and that is like your 100 for that day, that's okay. And it's okay to continue want to improve and do better and be better, but don't kick yourself for it, because that's the only way we're going to learn, right? We're going to learn by making these small mistakes and not being perfect, which should never, ever be the goal.
But it's interesting because when we didn't get the 100%, I found that, like this is kind of me, and I'm just speaking in generally that my brain went to, that's okay. Just work harder, study harder. Next time
Next
you can
time.
do this, right? And so what
Yeah.
was lacking there was processing the emotion, like being willing to sit in negative emotion, being willing to sit in disappointment, you know, frustration, anger. What tends to happen, I think, you know, if you don't have that, is you push it aside, you use some kind of buffering techniques, you know, social media, screens, alcohol, like as adults, alcohol, food, right? Like food is a way in, even in childhood in our culture, we're like, oh, you're feeling bad. Here you go. Have your favorite, blah, 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 you know? And so now I think that I am so grateful that I've gone through so much in my life that when, so I have two kids, one's 11, one's nine, both half, you have to say 11 and a half, 9 and a half, because they get all crazy about that. But and boys, and so different personalities, but I see genetically my older one's predisposed to what we are wired for a lot of times in the profession, people pleasing. And even if I normalize imperfection. Like he still strives for it, but he is seeing that I'm saying, oh, I messed up with the timing. Oh, you know, and I'm like, I feel bad about it, you know, and it's okay to feel bad instead of, oh, you feel bad. How do you just feel better right away?
Yeah, absolutely. And I love that you are instilling that into them, because even though it may not click now, it will. It will eventually. And they will look back and say, you know what, Mom mentioned multiple times that it's okay that this wasn't perfect. I did my best, and I actually am pretty happy and happy with the progress, right?
Yes.
I'm proud of the progress, the improvements I've made. And that's something that we stress in our household as well, that no, you didn't get 100%, which was never the goal. But did you do better than when you first started? Do you remember how you struggled with the homework and now you're flying through it? That took a week. That took 2 weeks. That took months, whatever the timeline is. It's your timeline, and you're moving forward, and that's all we can ask for. And I love how you mentioned, you know, sitting in your emotions. That's something that actually I learned during my infertility journey, that I kept moving from like, okay, this didn't work, what's next? Okay, this didn't work, what's next? And obviously there's a lot more emotions and a lot more sensitivities involved when it comes to growing your family. But I remember after my first miscarriage, I called my clinic supervisor, who's like in charge of like scheduling and everything. I was like crying in the parking lot in my car, and I was like, that's it. I as of today, I'm off clinic. I need a break. And she was confused because she didn't know what happened. And, you know, she was like, is everything okay? And I'm like, no, but effective immediately. I don't know how long. Let's throw out a number. I need you to cancel or reschedule all my patients. I'm not going to be coming back for the next however many weeks. And during that time, I took a significant break, significant for me, break that I'd never taken before. I'd never given myself a chance to breathe and acknowledge all the stuff that's been happening. And, you know, I felt a little sorry for myself, and it was okay. And I, you know, sat and I grieved, and I sat in the feeling that like, this sucks. This is not fair. And it was the best decision I made, because it really grounded me, centered me, recharged me, and I had a new game plan.
You know, if you're, and I'm talking to everyone who's listening right now, it's like, if you're listening and you're like, well, that's not the thing that I'm struggling with, right? I just want you guys to think about, like, you can fill in the blank here, right? Like, what's the thing that didn't work out the way that you think it thought it would be, right? It could be your career. It could be your marriage. It could be your relationship with your mother. It could be it's your body, right? Like a lot of women, we struggle with this. So I just want you guys to like, think about like, okay, hey, I didn't go through what Flora went through, or sometimes like I didn't go through what Pyle went through, but I'm struggling with something else. We all have the thing that is our first time that we're getting this awareness that, oh, wait, the formula doesn't work. You know, it doesn't always work. Work hard, do this equals that, right? Like the success formula. And so I just want you guys to allow yourself to listen to this being like, oh, for me, it was that. Like when Flora's talking, like infertility is not something that came into my world because it's the complete opposite. Like that was easy for me, but love and companionship has been my biggest struggle, right? And feeling cared for and like, you know, all those feelings for me. And so this is what's amazing, is that we all have the thing. Then there's going to be probably more things, right? And this is just the first thing, you know, like my son, my older one, like I'm working with him because he's such a perfectionist that he's having a lot of anxious feelings and negative self-talk. And as a pediatrician, and now as an integrative doc too, because I am like all about the woo-woo mindfulness stuff, right? And I work, you know, as a doc like that, then you add a coach who's been working for so long and kind of pioneering this work. I'm like, oh my God, like this is tough, but we already went through something bad before. It doesn't mean check bad thing done, right? But when you do this work, right, Flora, and you can agree with me on this, is that you don't stay in the cycle as long, you don't spin as long, you're able
Yes.
to acknowledge, accept, connect, and then be like, okay, I'm choosing to feel sorry for this much time, and then done.
Yep,
Right?
absolutely. I think it's great to feel, acknowledge, sit in your feelings, but don't linger, right? We get into trouble when we linger and we allow those feelings and emotions to dictate our actions and decisions, relationships. So I love the idea of acknowledge, feel, sit, move on, and give yourself a time frame, because if you don't, that's also another recipe for not being able to get out of that cycle that you were mentioning. There was something else that you had mentioned in everything that you just said, and I'm blanking, but we'll probably come back to it.
That's why I keep a little pen down, because I'm like, oh, this thing. And it's
I
like,
should have done that.
My ADD brain like won't remember it. And so, and I was telling Flora how like none of my podcasts are scripted. Like we just met today, and like, it just, you can always find the common like connection, like the humanness, and especially with women, and especially with women with immigrant descent stories. Like, I just feel so connected in this space. So again, none of the stuff we were talking about was planned, but I just felt like, oh, this is a good way to go. So going back to mindset work, what do you incorporate in your day? Maybe that would be helpful to share.
Yeah. So the foundation of a lot of the work that I do on myself and with my clients are self-affirmations. Affirmations are seen as something so woo-woo, but what affirmations are just our self-talk. You know, as children, we learn about how to be kind to others and respectful and non-judgmental, but no one ever tells that to do that with ourselves. And so we are our hardest critic. I've said things to myself that I would never repeat out loud to anybody. So we always, always, always start with working on how that inner voice and separating that inner voice. So I have a negative inner voice named Evilla, and Evilla will never define me, but I acknowledge Evilla. She's there, right? She's there trying to, like, you know, muck up my day. But I have these reactive affirmations that I use to react to that negative voice in my head, which is normal, by the way. We're human. It's okay to have that negative voice. Maybe utilize it to push you in another direction. So I really do start my day with without social media. I do not start my day with my phone. When it's my alarm, and then it gets put down. And I start my day with quietness, with peace, with a little bit of affirmations in the mirror. They've become a little more reactive and kind of just automatic for me. And I always start out my day with like an hour to myself. I think especially as women, we have been groomed to give a little bit of ourselves to everyone and anyone. And I know you can relate, as physicians and physicians in primary care, we give a little bit of ourselves to our patients all day, right? That empath in us comes out. Then we come home before and after our work. We give ourselves to our coaching clients, our family, our kids, our significant others, our extended family. So that 1 hour, I have verbalized this to my partner, to my child even. This is me. This is my time. And it's 1 hour out of the 16-hour day that I usually pull for me just do what I want to do. And if it's sleeping in, so be it. Most of the time it's not. Most of the time it's I start my day with movement. But if it's just me having a cup of coffee downstairs, either join me and let's hang, or let's exercise together, let's do yoga, let's meditate together, or you leave mommy alone. And my daughter has always known that as soon as she could comprehend what that meant. And she knows that as a rule. And so oftentimes I think we use our family and our kids as an excuse, like, oh, so-and-so won't let me. They will. You just need to explain it to them. And if they need buy you, that's okay too. And everyone, regardless of age, I think needs that me time.
So, how do you do that on a clinic day?
So I wake up extra early.
Yeah. And you were going to say, hey, listen, I start coaching at 6 a.m. All my days. So because I have my East Coast clients and my Central client. So I actually prefer that over 6 p.m. So I can relate to you on this.
Absolutely. My on time is usually the morning, and usually around like 1 p.m. I kind of start slowing down. So I always book activities and things around my like high time. So on average, I wake up at 5:45 in the morning. Take 5 to 10 minutes to kind of do all my morning routine, jump into the gym, which I work out at home for, so it makes it easy. Do my thing and then start my day. So, getting my kid ready and the dog and my husband's running around and it just starting the chaos of the morning. I get to clinic by usually 7:55, so I usually leave around 7:30. And so between 5:45 and 6:45 is just that my time, me time, and then get ready, get Gia up. And also I want to add that I don't do any of this by myself. I have a very helpful partner. I have a village of people who help me not only keep my house clean and clutter free, but also help me with my kid. Yes, I have one child, but guess what? We got two working parents in the household, and I have a nanny that helps me with everything, right? She's like a godsend. And so I do want to stress that I don't do this alone. And yeah, I have help.
Yeah, and also you guys, like, this is what I want to say, like, we have worked so hard our whole life to have the education so we can have the career so we can have the money. So why not use the money for this purpose? And I think this is where sometimes people struggle is like, we've the scarcity mindset when it comes to money. It's like, oh, I'm supposed to make it. I'm supposed to make it. And I can use it in certain ways. Like, I'll tell you one way. I'm like, weddings. People do so much money at weddings, right? Like, I can say we did whatever, right? Like, gold, you name it, right? Those kind of things. But oh, I should be able to manage my one kid. I'm just gonna say this for you, right? I should be able to, I have a supportive, loving husband. Like, we can work together, right? It's okay to give yourself permission to not do the things that you don't care for, right? I don't care to clean a toilet ever. And I live in a house with all boys.
That's a
It's
different ball game, I will have
a
to say. I had a brother
disgusting
growing up.
situation. I was like, no, during COVID, it was like torture. But anyways, but I was like, I taught them how to do things themselves, and that's like a whole different story. But allow yourself to spend the money you work so hard to make.
Absolutely. And I think a lot of us are kids of first generation immigrants. And so I think that immigrant scarcity mindset was real, right? They had to put our parents, most of us had to put food on the table, work and expand their family and make it in a brand new country across the world. So understandably, there was a specific mindset that they developed that worked for them in their situation. We are privileged to be in a space and in a position to not only work on ourselves, but to have the education, the backing, and the finances to delegate differently. And I also want to add that yes, weddings and gold, but let's bring it to like the current, US times, the materialism. Right? The keeping up with the Joneses. Do you
Tesla.
need a $1,000 bag or can you divert those $5,000 towards having reliable help so your day-to-day brain is not cluttered and overwhelmed? That just outweighs any, and trust me, everyone, I love my luxury goods.
Yeah, I know you're gonna say
Don't get me wrong.
that.
Yeah, I'm like, I'm wearing like beautiful Apple headphones right now that I worked hard for and saved up for. But again, it's like the whole saving and that need to be the women that we grew up watching. My mom didn't work. She raised us. She ran a household, which is, I think, one of the hardest jobs in the world. But growing up, that was the thought that I had in my head that I had to do the cooking and the cleaning and rearing children. Oh, wait, and also have a full-time career. And I remember like the first year that I had Gia, I was doing it, but I'm like, at what cost? Like, what?
Yeah.
This is driving me crazy. I will not survive this way.
You
And
forgot to
so,
say thin and beautiful.
oh my gosh, I
Because
totally forgot about that.
there's
Totally forgot about that.
also that
And
physical expectation
yes,
too, right?
absolutely. It's and again, I think we can utilize those aspects of our cultural upbringing for good,
Yes.
without it bringing
Yeah.
ourselves down and put ourselves in a
Yeah.
negative mindset.
You know, in my coaching, I talk about the all or none phenomena and like the gray zone. And I myself am a very all or none person. And so that's a biggest shift for me is to be able to see it in gray, but not out of a place of I have to, I resent it. It's like no other option, but really like that is my option. I get to see things in the gray zone. And so, like, even our culture, right? Like, I love so much. And actually, I have been leaning more into the culture since I've started this work because I'm not like, oh, the culture taught me to sacrifice myself and be like live in the patriarchy. And even with the education, now I'm like, oh, there's so many amazing things about my culture, especially the goddess energy. And I'm very woo because I did a fellowship in integrative medicine. And so, like, I'm just obsessed with all that stuff. And I was like, yeah, I have that within myself. I get to allow myself to let that flourish inside of me. And I think that when we show up, you know, doing things out of the box, right? And also, I think that we're surrounded by other women who are doing things out of the box. Like, I went to Orange County to see Bullock when she came to do her book thing, right? And I was talking to her about like the work that I do. And I was like, I love that you did something so different. I was out of the usual career options, and you're not like, I can only do it a certain way. And there's so many people like Pyle does different things. Like, I'm just like naming different people, but I feel so inspired that there's people who are like, I don't have to do things the way that everyone else does them. And the journey is not going to be easy. And you and I can probably, you know, attest to that it's not been easy. When I came into the coaching space, I went to the life coach school, I walked through the space. It was like no one looked like me. Right. It was like
Isn't that
fascinating.
crazy?
And all three of my coaches, like I have different coaches for different reasons, they were like, Pyle, who better to coach your people than you?
Then you, exactly.
But they're like, why
Exactly.
don't
I
you?
love that.
And I was like, because I'm playing small, because that's what my culture taught me. So now I'm like shifting that. And one of the biggest things that I talked about was, so before Flora and I started, I asked her like if I pronounced her name right. You know, that's a big part of my work that I do, because for over 20 something years, 25 years, I never corrected people if they said my name wrong. Now my name can be pronounced in many different ways, right? Payal, Payal, PayPal, whatever. People say all kinds of things, right? I promise you. But I never corrected anyone because this was me not wanting to bother. And that is the thing that now I'm like, no, to be seen, like whatever it is, I'm going to make sure I see you and I want people to see me. And so this is what my coaches, I talked to them and I ended up giving, I was the first, like, so you'd be fascinated with this. I was the first Asian person on stage in our school, which is huge, in front of 2,500 people, first physician, but first person to talk like this, to talk about what's in a name. And that has been like my biggest like shift, that I was terrified, but to be looking like me in front of people who don't look like me to talk about this. And since then, I was like, oh my gosh. So many people came up to me and said, you know, I'm not brown, but people say my name wrong and I never correct them. And it's not about the name. It's a symbolic for our humanness, our presence. Like we're not wanting to take up space, especially as brown women, especially brown women in medicine. Right? I tell my clients, I'm like,
Absolutely.
they love hiring brown women because we don't say anything.
We're workhorses. That's what we were taught to do. Stay quiet, put your head down, work, and go home and
Yeah.
do whatever you're supposed to be doing. I love the conversation of what's in a name, and I think that's beautiful that you had the opportunity to share your story, because it's also, I'm assuming it was also very empowering for you. But I think that's also like kind of
Terrifying.
channeling that female energy though, right? Like just being able
Yeah.
to not only say a very simple sentence, it's actually pronounced bile. That's a very simple, straightforward,
I
direct,
didn't say
concise
it.
statement that is so scary because we were taught to just put our heads down and do the work
When
when
I
in
went to,
reality, go
yeah,
ahead.
sorry, I started to, but I was saying, when I went to school, there wasn't anyone else who looked like me. So I was kind of like, not like I was in a community of other brown people.
Yeah, it really does. And I think our society, regardless of whether you're talking about the South Asian society or the traditional American, depending on where you grew up, I grew up in a very small town. Maybe there were like 11 to 12 Indian families. And so, yes, I was always out of, I was always a minority wherever I went. I always got stares just because
You're
I
brown.
looked different, name was different, my last name was different, my parents talked differently. It was just it was part of my identity. And I think growing up in the US, you kind of go through like this identity split where you want to be like your white friends, right? And you want to look how they look and talk how they talk and do what they do. And also, like, you wanted their parents because they had other, more flexible ways of thinking about the world, when they didn't have the same, obviously, life experiences as our parents. But it was just really interesting because I wanted to assimilate so badly that I did shrink myself. And so when there were opportunity to correct somebody, even when as I got older and as I moved to more diverse areas of the US, I couldn't because I never wanted to in the past, but I wasn't groomed to otherwise.
Where did you grow up?
I grew up in West Virginia.
Oh, East Coast girl. Okay, this is very
Yeah, very
interesting.
small town, very small town. I was there until like sophomore year of high school, and then I moved to finish off high school. I moved to Arizona, Phoenix, and
So
so which was
also,
obviously
yes.
very different and
Same.
very, it was a huge culture shock.
So I grew up in LA. I grew up in Eagle Rock, which is,
Okay.
near
Oh, okay.
Pasadena. And still, but like sometimes, so I spent a decade in the East Coast in New Jersey, New York, and I was like, wow, this is really different.
Such a
Like I did my
change.
residency there. I got married and had kids there, and it's just like so different. And I'm looking at the way our kids are growing up now, and I'm so happy to see more variety. Not only is it people of different backgrounds, but also mixed race.
Such a good conversation. We're going to continue this next week. So tune in for our part two. Thank you so much, Dr. Flora, for being here. And looking forward to what feedback we get from my audience. I just love to hear back from all of you guys and see, how are things similar? What do you connect with? What's something that you don't agree with? Like, let's bring it all to the table. Let's open the conversation. Hey, if you're finally ready to start being happy, I invite you to join my list. This is where you'll have access to all my workshops, coaching, and pearls. Just head to my website, www.pialgeial.com, that's PAYALGHAYAL, and join my list. I can't wait to meet you.